Welcome to this very, very special episode of this Team Wales Partner Podcast series. It's the highlights episode. Now, we sat down throughout the series with some brilliant partners of Team Wales. And what was really interesting was listening back to a lot of the insights, some really interesting kind of moments of vulnerability from personal point of views, but also around the business, what the businesses do, what these partners do, and what the impact is not only on themselves, on their relationship with Team Wales, but most importantly, everybody that is involved with that organisation. There's some really, really powerful stuff in here, and we are so excited to share just some of the highlights from throughout the series. In this first episode, we've sat down with Matthew Anderson, Sign Inc., and he talked just brilliantly about some of his own struggles, mainly around how we communicate. It's not just about talking, it's about listening and where it lands. Check it out.
I use social media, like 99.9% of the UK. I use it, and recently, over the past years, I would say, there's always been the odd campaign, you get the odd celebrity saying, look, check up on people. Check up, make sure they're okay and stuff. And yeah, you should. But it literally is just a tiny bit more than that. The easiest thing in the world is just to send your mate a text message saying, everything all right? And if you know they're struggling or something as well, sending a text message saying, everything okay? How's things these days? You'll get a thumbs up or you'll get, yeah, all good, thanks, good. I'm sorted. And I'm guessing that 80% of people who send that message will just think, right, damn it, he's fine. He sent me a thumbs up, he's fine. Whereas recently, in my own experience, you think, okay, thumbs up, fine, okay. So just follow that with a second message. Oh, great, what have you done? Or what, you know, what you up to? How are you sorted? What you know, because I know you haven't been all right. Because I've had those messages. Everything all right, Martha? How's things these days? How was your situation? I got my situation. Maybe we'll touch about that in a bit. You're going to send the message back because, I'm fine. I'm good. You're not going to go into that because this isn't a therapy scenario. It's a mate just asking you how's things, you know? So I don't feel obliged to be able to say to somebody, well, actually, because then you're going to think, oh, is that guy on the other end thinking, oh my God, why did I ask that question? He just bombarded me with an essay and what's happened to him over the last couple of weeks. The good to talk bit is good, but the onus isn't on the person who's got the issue to talk. I think they should have just maybe rephrased that statement and said, look, good to talk, follow up, you know, talk, literally ask. It's good to ask, maybe. People who struggle with mental health, part of the problem is they don't talk. And so they're not going to feel that somebody telling them to talk is who do they talk to? What do they say? No, it's a bit of an easy, another one, you know, an easy, I hope you're okay, thumbs up, he's okay, lads, come on, pull a pub. Really enough, right? I mean, I got people who were struggling with situations and stuff. Sometimes, if I put my hands up, I don't even send a, I hope you're all right message. Sometimes I think, well, look, if you want to talk, you'd send me a message. And that's the problem. You know, that's the bit there, that void in the middle of getting a conversation going or getting people to start talking. I mean, who started? Is it the guy who's struggling or the girl that's struggling or is it the guy who knows they're struggling and they need to instigate something? So there's a little void, like where the tide goes in and out, nothing happens in between, you know?
Now here we sat down with Tim and Laura from Brown Jacobson. The legal world is pretty high pressured. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of expectations. But Tim and Laura are just determined to keep the person at the heart of everything they do, both personally, but then as an organisation. There were lots of bits I could have picked out, really. And I made a bit of a call and just thought, yes, this is a policy-based part of the episode that we discussed. This is so important. The positive impact that equality, that equity has on relationships, personally and professionally, but also people's mental health, giving everybody the opportunity to fulfill their careers, but also support their families. Really interested to get your thoughts and just enjoy this next part of the episode.
Yeah, we're really proud of this. So we've just end of last week, announced our equalised parenting policy. So in effect, we've taken what was our paternity, non-pregnant parent, non-primary adopter policy to match it to our maternity or pregnant parent policy. So in effect, whereas previously the birthing individual could take 13 weeks full pay and 13 weeks half, that's now open to anyone who has a child, whether they're the birthing parent or not. So in a traditional heterosexual couple, it's not just the woman who has the maternity pay, it's the man who has the equivalent to that as well. So 13 weeks full and 13 weeks half pay is available to them. That's a huge step. We're not the first law firm to have done it. You know, there's a couple of others that have taken that step to fully equalise, but it was really important for us to do it for a number of reasons. And gender equity is a huge one. You know, I've been a big believer for a long time that until men have the same opportunity to care for their children in the way to make the same kind of choices as women do, it's unfair on men, but it's also perpetuates issues around women and their progression in the workplace. So it's been a huge kind of objective of mine personally to get us to this place. Although I have to say I haven't done the legwork on it. I need to credit Anya Brewer and our senior partner Caroline Green, who did a lot of the work on getting this to the place that it's at and getting it through our exec, etc. And you're right, though, that the impacts around mental health and the ability of anyone to take time off around the birth of their child is really important. We know that a lot of mothers have mental health issues after the birth of children. You know, it's significant. And if the partner can't be there for them at that time, that can be pretty damaging. And so this will help with that as well. It will just help with, again, the other parent being able to be there at the beginning. And, you know, it's not something that was in place when I had my children or when Tim had his. And so it's brand new. It might take a bit of adaptation in terms of how we manage resource and things. We're sort of alive to that. But as a business, we felt it was a really important thing to do. And I took time off with both my children. It wasn't something that Tim had the opportunity to do. So it equalizes that, which is fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I was. So when we had our daughter, Megan, who was our first child, I was still working for the Welsh Government at that time. And so their paternity pay and leave was quite good in comparison to lots of places by that point. I think I had a full month off, fully paid, which was quite long in 2015. Should know that, shouldn't I? But what happened? And so whilst there is that sort of equalizing of it, and the fact that what that will allow people to be able to do without the worry is amazing. What it would have done for me, which you couldn't have foreseen at the time, was taken a whole load of additional pressure off, because Megan was born in August, my wife's dad died in the October, and her mum died in the January. And so in that first 6 month period of her becoming a new mum, she lost like a massive part of her support network through her parents no longer being with us. We live in Penarth. Her mum and dad live just outside Swansea. And so there was a whole load of things that she needed to do around the sort of estate side of, alongside her brothers and sisters. So she was back and forth to Swansea a lot at that time. Now, again, luckily, outside of the paternity policy within Welsh Government, I had that flexibility at the time where I could sort of come and go from the office on flexi time, and I did have the ability to work remotely, albeit through an iPad, which when I look back, I don't know how I managed to do work through an iPad in the systems that I had back then, but I managed to do it. You look at this policy being in place, if that's there, that whole 6 months just is like the additional stress of having to manage the work side of it is just gone because you're there. I wouldn't want that to be a reason for anybody to have to rely on that policy in a greater way, but it just goes to show the additional benefits that it can have when something completely unforeseen happens, such as that.
Yeah, this deserves significantly longer than we've got time for, sadly, but I just thank you for it because it is a statement of intent. And I totally acknowledge, Laurie, you say that, you know, you're not the first law firm to do it. At the same time, you know, it's an incredible amount of work that goes in. It's just the right thing to do. And I think there's a really interesting bit, and I think this is probably speaking from a male perspective. I didn't really think about it. I totally thought about everything you said, Tim, around the pressures, and very similar with my wife after our first child. 6 months later, her dad died unexpectedly, and it was just right. How can I take the pressure off? But the whole career development piece, it hadn't landed until you mentioned it. Well, yeah, well, of course that is a huge part of it, and why can't we help?
So next up, we spoke to Lisa and Chiron from Principality Building Society. Now, they're super passionate about well-being and mental health themselves, but also for their colleagues and their clients and customers. Really interesting from Chiron's point of view, talking about how they really support vulnerable people, customers, around the finances, and ultimately how they can make sure they can support them really as best they can and support the people and not the problem, which was fascinating. But in this particular part of the episode that we've pulled out, Lisa brilliantly, heartwarmingly, amazingly, vulnerably shares her mental health journey, her challenges through depression, anxiety, from the birth of her child. And, you know, for anyone that's affected, please do check out the resources. I do want to flag a bit of a trigger warning for this. Really interested to get your thoughts and your insights. And I wonder if some of it can relate.
Yeah, so mine started when I was pregnant with my second child. I had prenatal depression, of which I'd never heard of before, didn't know what that was. Started off with panic attacks, I guess, and social anxiety, struggled in work. I couldn't, thought it was baby brain, first of all, like I couldn't even concentrate to send an email, but it really got to the point where I couldn't leave the house. I was lucky enough that I was in an area that I had a specialist midwife that looked after me and supported me throughout my pregnancy. It was that bad that I was on medication while I was pregnant as well. And it was a lot of worry that you take at that point. But I remember being told, it's one of the memories that stick in my mind, is that the stress that you're feeling can actually impact the baby more than taking medication. So that's a decision I had to make at the time. And then you obviously go through that thing of when you then give birth, thinking, am I then going to get postnatal depression? And I had a few weeks of reprieve. It was like cloud lifting moment, just as they talk about it. Then I did have postnatal depression, and it was a very different experience to the prenatal depression for me. I had severe depression, I had severe anxiety, but it was much more focused on the depression. I was self-harming. I had a few attempts where I had attempts at suicide, and it was really bad. A lot of hallucinations, and it probably went as bad as it could have got. But I was off work in total for about 16 months, I think it was. I was off in total. So I think when I came back from that, then it was just you learn a lot. You know, I had a newborn baby. I had a toddler running around as well. So for me, it wasn't the typical stigma that you hear about postnatal depression. Anything I only ever thought about was only about myself, and still completely idolized my children. So they're the ones that really kept me going, and family and friends were brilliant throughout it as well. So yeah, the worst time of my life. But I think what you do come back from it is you realize when you've gone that you can come out at the other end and actually learn a lot more about yourself. A lot of things like counseling and everything taught me a lot about how to get through that, how to get better. But then that's where I turned it into how can I help others as well, because you realize when you've been there and you can see the signs in others, you don't want anyone else to experience it as bad as you did. I would never wish anyone to go through what I did. So
I mean, first of all, thank you for sharing all that. Really, really appreciate it. And good saying, I mean, you're clearly in a much better place now, which is great. And again, thanks for trusting us with that. Yeah, you kind of led into it, really. It's not to dismiss it, but to go, right, no one's going to feel the way I felt. So how can I help? And how can I create an environment where people don't? Now, the next highlight we've picked out is from Susie Drain, Chair of the Athletes Commission, a lecturer at Cardiff Met, and an all-round legend of Welsh sport. Now, what was really interesting speaking to Susie was that people are such a huge, huge part of what she does and how she goes about her life. And this was really interesting when we kind of spoke about some of the tools to fill the toolbox and what's important to her. There's loads and loads of brilliant stuff around transition and working with elite athletes and also students. But this highlight in particular was so people focused. It was a really powerful moment. I'd love to know what you think.
So actually, I suppose you're helping me to write my, I know I'm going away next week for a couple of days, but I've actually got to write a presentation on my second module of my doctorate. And we're talking about, you know, what skill development have I had? And I totally agree with you in terms of being able to listen. It, like communication, I think a big one we all think is talking, verbal, non-verbal, and listening is invaluable. Like you just said about not judging people, because everyone has had, there's always something going on in the background that we might not know about, that we can't make judgments about because we don't know. And actually just trying to support people where we need to, in particular with students. They've got loads going on, you know, and we don't necessarily want to open up to us, which is, you know, completely their decision. what I suppose your friendships do, what your friends do and your people is you can absolutely just roll out everything to them. They'll listen. They'll be that blanket there for you, that protection, if you like, to do that and then pick you back up. And I think in uni when the skills that we need as personal tutors, especially for the new first years, is some of that. So it's not being judgmental because we know, and I will say all the time, you will make mistakes. You will fail assessments at some point, as long as it's not three times in a row. Learn the lessons. But, you know, you have to make errors in life to learn and navigate your way through. I don't know anyone that's had a journey that's been positive all of the time or made no mistake. Introduced me to that human being. I don't believe that, that would be the case. But I suppose, yeah, communication is really, really important. Care. And I think, people forget that as lecturers, we care. We care absolutely. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this job. And for the young adults that are trying to find their way and they're coming out of education for the first time and away from home, perhaps some of them for the first time, trying to find out about themselves, like who they are. And I don't mean just in an academic sense of what they want to do and what roles they want to be in. Some of them are navigating different, who they are in life. Who do they want to be and who, they can actually do that a little bit more in uni. It's not necessarily easy for them either. So we've got to be that support, that non-judgmental support, the person who listens, doesn't make any judgment, doesn't necessarily tell them the answers, but encourages them to seek guidance, make decisions for themselves.
Your face softened lovely then when you said care. It just quite clearly conveyed that is such a big thing for you. Going on the last sort of half an hour, everything is about other people, person-centered. Yeah, you'll challenge. Yes, there's positive challenge, but at the end of the day, people before anything else, whether that's a student or sports person or whoever. So yeah, that was amazing.
Here we spoke to Morgan Jones from Disability Sport Wales, but also part of the Athletes Commission. Fascinating story, really, that Morgan shares with us. You're going to have to listen to the whole episode for this bit, but really interesting when he starts talking about his younger days and early life around bikes. And then when we talk about his clubhouse at the end around bikes as well, that's definitely worth giving a listen. But this is about really just unlocking things. He talked a lot about how he unlocks different tools for his toolbox, if you will, different passions, different insights, opportunities, mindsets. And it's a real positive kind of piece of the conversation we had. So really interested, as always, to hear what you think. But please enjoy this little highlight from Morgan Jones.
Yeah, there definitely was a period where I felt like I didn't quite have that really clear identity, because for so long people had known me in my work role is probably where I was the most aware of this. I used to work in a school and really enjoyed that job. Everyone in the school, all my colleagues and all the kids knew that, that's Morgan, that's Mr. Jones, he does athletic. And as that started to go away, I knew that was going away, but others didn't. But they would still speak about me in the same way. And it almost gave me a bit of like a imposter syndrome. It's like, this young person thinks that I am still an amazing athlete, but I know that I'm not actually feeling it in the same way. I know that I'm just going through the motions in my training, in my competitions. Yeah, definitely had that little kind of battle with identity there. And I think that rugby came in and really helped me to deal with that and have something new to, I guess, focus on and talk about with people. So it made it easier for me to say, I'm not doing athletics anymore, full stop. I'm doing a little bit less athletics, but I'm doing this now. I'm working on this. This is a new challenge for me. I think that definitely helped, that thing to shift the focus to and have it not be a full stop. It's more of like I'm not doing athletics anymore, ... But this is what's next.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. That imposter syndrome bit's really interesting as well. And that often can be a big part of challenges with identity yourself, but more on that mental health piece. I think that just that little intro there gives people an insight into why I feel I haven't allocated anywhere near enough time for us to have a conversation, because I'm fascinated by it all. Next, we have Dr. Michael Mellick from Cardiff Met. And I am unapologetic when I say I absolutely adore this man. He's brilliantly him. He's authentic. The empathy he shows, the curiosity he shows, everything is aligned to people and sport. And I just really, really love how he looks at growth
mindsets, as well as tackling the tricky kind of negative aspects of mental illness and mental health and depression, etc. And of course, I managed to talk him into one of my favourite lines and see if you could pick up on it. Check it out. Dr. Michael Mellick from Cardiff Met. See what you think.
Yeah, so I think it forms part of accepting and committing to, all right, there is a part of me that will experience vulnerability at times. That doesn't make me a bad person. Does make me a person that needs and deserves support on occasion, but that's not all of me, and that I can still have those vulnerabilities, but still also have amazing strengths. And I think one of the issues, particularly in high performance environments, that we focus so much on outcome and trying to correct deficits that we can lose connection with the strengths as individuals, but also the strength as a team. And then suddenly we have an environment that's based on fear of failure as opposed to growth. And so particularly within sporting teams and athletes I work with, I try now to do just as much work when they're going through an adversity around maintaining and reconnecting them to their strengths. Because often when we get into that period of despair that mental illness can cause, we start to catastrophize. It's hard, really hard to recognize a way out if you lose connection to some of those strengths that you've had that's allowed you to persevere, that have allowed you to manage these vulnerabilities in the past. So yeah, I'm really interested in ensuring that we maintain strength-based conversations. And I don't mean that in terms of needing a psychologist to get parachuted in. I mean that everyone within that workplace or everyone within that team takes responsibility to have those strength-based conversations with each other. And I'll get it in nice and early because I know you like it. Trying to move our high-performance environments away from a duty of care and instead recognize that we all within that community have a duty to care. And that could be the medical practitioner, but it could also just be your peer, could be your mate, could be your teammate, could be your work colleague. And so I really like that distinction.
I do too. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, all jokes aside, it's a really simple thing, but it does distinguish between kind of maybe the more historical, the more clinical, the more invasive, maybe, is that a fair word, approach versus the just look after your pals. Just be there, be present.
That's a really great phrase. So I can remember the AFL, Australian Football League in Australia, ran a campaign based on look after your mate. And the image that went through that was the team with interlocking arms. And that's a really nice visual, isn't it? That all we're really asking for here is that ability to have some empathy and insight into what's happening for a colleague or for your teammate. And again, that notion of a duty to care is just, I think, it's just being a good citizen. And I think we've lost contact with that. And actually, yeah, by just being a good citizen within these communities, that can go a long way to making a person who's feeling quite vulnerable, making them feel safe.
Okay, Kerry Maund, Pure Cyber. Really enjoyed my time sitting down with Kerry, listening to everything that Pure Cyber does, what it does and how it works with the people, but also the complexities of the kind of industry they're in. You know, it's a real challenge, it's high pressured, and everything needs to be focused on looking after people, focusing on what they can do, how we can make it as easy as possible for them in high pressured environments. Kerry was brilliantly open around her kind of approach to things, the work mum aspect, and it's definitely a compliment, I'll stand by that. So it's a really interesting conversation that we had, and look, check it out. We'd love to know your thoughts.
Yeah, so it's something that having been sort of in the working environment for quite a few years now has become more and more important. And for me personally, the discussions around it have definitely sort of improved over the years. And as an organisation, you know, we are absolutely passionate that our teams are supported around their mental health. As you can imagine, as we've touched on already, you know, cybersecurity brings with it a lot of responsibility, and that can be stressful on many levels. So it's incredibly important to us that our teams from whatever level feel that they have that support network around them. And that is a really authentic, genuine sort of piece for us as an organization. I'd like to think, even as we grow, that remains the same. You know, I feel that is a passion that everyone brings their whole self to work. We don't, you know, there's a drive from the CEO down that whatever you're going through from a personal perspective and a work perspective, you're able to find a way to share that if you're struggling in any way. So communication is huge for us, and knowing that you've got that support network, regardless of who that is within the business. Some people are more comfortable talking to others. Some are more comfortable talking to their managers potentially, but encouraging that communication is huge for us, and so that nobody sort of holds anything in that they potentially could be helped with if they shared.
Absolutely. I think that's really important what you mentioned there around it's not necessarily the person that you should be talking to is the one you feel most comfortable. It could be someone completely unrelated. And that maybe particularly in the workplace, people feel that those hierarchical structures, if they are in place, you know, that's where you've got to go. But recognizing that, you also smile quite a bit when you talked about authenticity. I'll do this a lot, by the way.
Okay. Yeah.
You smile, you talked about, you know, being authentic and living those values and also bringing your whole self to work. Just how important is that for you individually, but then for you as an organization as well?
Yeah, I think, for me individually, I think, through my experiences, sometimes I've felt like I haven't brought my whole self to work in different organizations that I've worked in on a global sort of scale. So I feel really passionate that our employees and obviously myself feel like they can be whoever they are and make sure that they don't feel like they need to hide anything when they come to work. And we have a diverse workforce. We encourage everyone to just be themselves. We are a very welcoming and friendly organization. So I think that helps. And, we are absolutely sort of so proud of the team. And I think that feeling, like I mentioned, authentic, there's an authentic drive behind that. We're not a box ticking organization. You know, there's a passion from Damon, our CEO, right from the start, in that everyone feels comfortable in their environment and doesn't feel like they need to sort of hold anything back. And I think that comes across from day one. He doesn't, so I don't think anyone else should. So, I'm really proud of us as an organization. We obviously offer a lot on the sort of HR and the support and the sort of employee assistance program and all the things that an organization should offer. But I think we go above and beyond in terms of how supportive we are in a genuine sense. So I think quite often you mentioned not always going to your manager or role, but I think as a more senior in age person within the organization, sometimes people feel comfortable chatting to me. I get called workman quite a lot. So I take that as a compliment. It's quite interesting that we also have a mental health first aider who is absolutely incredible and brings with him incredible experiences of what he did before he came to Pure Cyber, being ex-military. Yeah, so we are very lucky in that sense that we have a lot of sort of genuine support there for our teams. And yeah, we arrange a lot of different things in different ways that people can sort of communicate and share and feel relaxed enough to talk about how they're managing. Some of them are social, some of them are just a walk in the fresh air that we sort of put really sort of casual, but it's nice when you have those conversations outside of that working environment as well. I think you get to know people a little bit. They're more happy then to sort of chat to you about other things that may be going on outside of the...
Yeah, I think first of all, workman is definitely a compliment.
I used to be slightly offended, but now I'm like, okay, well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Definitely, yeah, I can understand, but it's absolutely a compliment. It's a great thing. And I think you mentioned there around whether it's socials or creating environments. You know, I haven't had any direct experience of Pure Cyber yet. When you see things on social media or online, or you talk to people about the experience they have in Pure Cyber's presence, and I say Pure Cyber as an organization because, the people do embody that. It's an incredibly positive thing. It comes across as authentic, and it comes across as a type of organization that ultimately is dealing with a really tricky thing, products. Yep. Area of the world, but ultimately it doesn't mean that the people that work within it need to be any less cared for and any less kind of looked after, really, I guess. So that's the impression I get externally as well. So here we have Chelsea Pinches Burrows from the WCS agency. Absolutely superb person, both from a professional point of view,
but also the vulnerability, the honesty and authenticity she showed throughout the conversation was really, really inspiring. And if you've listened to the episode, you'll know that's a challenge that Chelsea finds being called inspiring. I really love this bit about therapy. Talking therapy is a big thing. I'm a huge advocate. It doesn't get the positive press it should do. So I was really grateful to get Chelsea's perspective, the good, the bad and the ugly around therapy and how it benefits her. See what you think.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I speak often about the agency being six, doing really well. I'm not 30 yet. I'm getting very, very close to it. I've got two young boys. I'm a wife. Lots of people suck me up into this like vacuum of she's really successful, whatever that means, whatever successful means to you. But she's really successful. How do you do it? I don't often speak about the sacrifices that come with the pressures of all of that. The growth has been way quicker than we have really been able to get a hold of. You know, we're a team now of 12. I often say that's 12 mortgages, that's 12 electricity bills, that's 12 food shops. I've got two small boys. Again, there's their futures. And I think that that is something I don't get enough to talk about. It hasn't been easy. And it hasn't been easy, not because the day-to-day is hard, but you don't get to rest. Lots of my peers will hear me say, if I'm in the UK, then I'm working, which is why I go on holiday so much. It's not a woe is me either, but the pressure that comes with that, the, you know, thinking about team members, when one of your team members goes through something, there's two of you going through it because you know, you're not switching off from helping them with it either. But it, the pressure and the expectation, and when you win your first big blue chip. So I can remember they've been a client for 4 years now, but when we won one of our biggest clients, everyone was like, well, how did you do it? And who was on your radar next? And I can remember just feeling like, can I just enjoy this for a second? That I didn't think we were going to win either, but we have. And how are you guys talking about what we're going to do next? So yeah, it's tricky. And I mean, the first time round, I've mentioned already, I didn't get a maternity leave by choice. I wanted to go and find another opportunity that would give me more freedom and flexibility. But my youngest came along 3 years ago, and I had 3 weeks of maternity leave with him. He came on client shoots with us. He came to strategy meetings. He has literally been grown out of this agency, and my husband took my maternity leave, and that is wonderful. But the pressure that comes with that too is, oh my goodness, I'm not getting to spend any time with him. You know, am I breastfeeding was just not an option because I was never around. So you miss out on that element. So mental health wise, I've always really tried to look after myself, and it is deeper than just the self-care, right? I have therapy once a week. Like that is a non-negotiable for me. Having that independent person to literally say anything you want to. She's been my therapist for 6 years as well. So really nicely timed because she's seen the real evolution. And she asks some really, really challenging questions sometimes around, let's remember the why. What, like, why are you doing this? What parts are tricky? Which parts are you point blankly overthinking and getting too stuck into? So it's about, for me, the mental health piece is much more around who I associate myself with, who I spend time with, who I take good counsel from. I have a fantastic mentor who really does bring me back on track a lot of the time. And I do say to people sometimes that I'm doing this for the first time. This is not my background. So for me to think that I can do it first time and get everything right first time is ridiculous. But I have to remember that sometimes, because if I didn't, I think you'd get into really, really beating yourself up and feeling like you can't do it, or you're not successful, or you know, you're looking at other people and going, oh, well, how have they done that? I'm not able to do that. So it's something I've struggled with, but it's getting easier. But I suppose the bigger you get, the bigger the problems become. So it always feels like there's a new mountain to climb. But yeah, making sure you've got the right people hiking along with you has been incredible for me, and making sure that they steer me in the right direction.
That was wicked. I'm tempted to finish there because that's just listening to you. We won't, by the way. I've got loads that I want to ask, but just listening to you, like, and I'm going to say it was really inspiring just listening to that journey of how you talked about it then. And I know the inspiring piece, I'm going to ask a little bit more about that. We touched on that before. Therapy is amazing. I'm such an advocate of it. I think it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. Like, yeah. I don't know why it's not like everyone.
It's like mandatory. Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. And I think I want to explore a little bit on that you mentioned.
you're a leader. You talked a lot about people as well. You are so conscious about the people in your charge, which just comes across really clear. You've got that hour for you. You don't get that time anywhere else, because if you're not looking after the people in the business, you're at home with the boys, or, you know, you there's so many elements. How important is that hour for you, and kind of how do you feel after you come out of that hour session?
Really interesting, actually. And me and my husband speak about this a lot. I always feel crap after therapy. Immediately afterwards, I always feel just really rubbish. And I think it's because you just drudge everything up. And my sessions are mostly focused around work, around lifestyle, around just the juggle. But you drudge everything up. You almost bottle it up. So the days before, you're like, I'll add that to the list. I'll add that to the list. I'll add that to the agenda. I'll add that to the agenda. Then it all comes out. And afterwards, you're like, ah, okay. I was either being a lunatic, or now I understand how I've kind of worked through that. I understand why actually that might have happened, or I've got like something to take away to think about, or something to work on, or whatever it might be. But it's not a quick fix. And we're such complex human beings to think that there is 1 hour. Like, it even sounds mad to say that 1 hour a week is supposed to make you feel better. Like, it should be way more than that. Like, that's 4 hours a month that we spend actually just decompressing and having a checking with ourselves. Like, it's not enough. So yeah, I always feel crap immediately afterwards, because I think it's just a bit more of a release. But the day after, I'm like, oh, okay, I can smash the day now. And I always have them on Mondays, because Mondays is a great day for me. I always like come out the doors and I'm like right ready to smash a new week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, I'm like in the mud, in the thick of it, meetings are thick and fast, but I'm already steered in the right way. So my mindset will be, I know they're my busiest days, but my mindset is rearing and ready to go, because I almost arm myself with the tools on the Monday. So it's really important for me, but it's a long game. And which is why I really struggle with, you know, NHS waiting lists being so long. Like, I'm seeing the benefits of therapy five, six years in. Like, I can't imagine if someone was starting that journey now. I think the first 2 years of that were really bad. Like, you go to a session and be like, oh God, like, I need one of these every day, not once a week. So yeah, it feels nice now to be in the part that is like the maintenance part, not kind of the dealing with it part. But the wait list being so long, I feel like it's just, I wish more people can get through really, really quickly, so that they could get to the point where I'm at now, where it feels like I'm doing it just to keep myself on the straight and narrow, as opposed to doing it to fix something or to help something or to learn what we need to learn. So yeah, it's definitely not enough, but it gives you the right armor, I think, and it just builds that resilience, but over a long period of time.
So that's it for this highlights episode. How did you find it? Did you find some of the bits relatable? Did you find any of it a challenge? Don't forget, if there's anything that you found triggering or that you're a bit unsure about or you're a bit curious about, we've got some support in the show notes. Please do take a look. There's some great signposting there to organisations that can help. We really hope it's been comforting at times. I'm so grateful for everybody's time and energy into these conversations. Incredibly grateful to you as listeners. It's something that we really appreciate. And a massive, massive, massive thank you to the whole team at Team Wales for facilitating the opportunity to sit down with some great partners doing great things who are really passionate about people and supporting Wales. If you've only caught this episode, please take some time, head back through our library. There's some, all the full episodes with our guests are there. We really hope you enjoyed it, and hope to see you again sometime listening to the Team Wales Partner Podcast.